All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Kicking It with Rafael here on World Football Daily. Last week, we spoke with Will Tidy from Bleacher Report and David Jones, who is a Sky News Sky Sport presenter, I believe, and spoke some EPL, U21 England side, who have been playing really well lately. And with Will, we discussed the Premier League and a lot of things, actually, Spain, Italy, and so on. But today, we're only going to focus on Spain with our first guest. We have four great guests today. And our first guest out of Spain, out of Barcelona, Andy West, who is a Spanish football writer for BBC Sport, Sport 360, and a basketball commentator for the EuroLeague doing some of Barcelona's games, matches, whatever you want to call it. Andy, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Let's first off and talk about this Spanish Equatorial Guinea game. Besides the politics of it, people were very curious with the lineup, that the starting 11. It was very different from what we've seen in the past. Was this, you know, just to try things out ahead of the World Cup, or was this to give rest to the, you know, the other guys? What exactly were the motives behind, you know, starting this interesting lineup with guys who we don't see that often? We see them, but not that often.
Yeah, both of the things you said, really, and also the fact that a few of the regulars are out injured or rested. I think there's four Barcelona players, Xavi, Pique, and a couple more who would normally be playing, but they're not in the squad on this occasion. And with there being two friendlies now coming up, I think Del Bosque didn't want to play the same players in both games. So he's rested a lot of starters for the game against Equatorial Guinea, and it gives him a chance to have a look at them and for them to state their claim, because there is still a fair bit of uncertainty in the Spain team. There's only maybe half a dozen players who've got a definite place for the World Cup, assuming nothing happens between now and June. So there's plenty of options open to Del Bosque and a good opportunity for him to have a look at them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I was looking back at the 2010 World Cup, and something that I noticed is, yes, we know Spain won the finals. We know they also won the 2012 Euro finals, but also in a lot of the matches, they only won 1-0 or 2-1. I mean, they never seemed to dominate the opponent in scoring-wise. I mean, you could argue in tactics and so on. You mentioned only six guys you think that are completely secure for the World Cup this summer in Brazil. Are there any guys that you expect that have been in great form, you know, in La Liga or anywhere else, that you expect to see getting some time that they haven't gotten in the past two major tournaments?
Well, it starts right at the beginning in goal, and the very first question for Del Bosque is whether he should stick with Iker Casillas.
Right.
Of course, is a legend. He's the captain. Captain them to the World Cup and the European Championships, but he's not in the Real Madrid team. He's out of favour there, so he's only playing in the Champions League. Carlo Ancelotti's decision to split the playing time between him and Diego Lopez. And Lopez is doing really well, and there's an argument that he should be in the Spain squad, but he's not. And one player who's been magnificent all season is Victor Valdez for Barcelona. And he has got a very strong case to come into the starting lineup now ahead of Casillas, for the fact that Casillas hasn't been playing. He's never done anything wrong for the national team, and Del Bosque is extremely loyal to his captain, so he'll probably stick with Casillas. But if he doesn't get his place back at Madrid in the next 6 or 7 months, he'll be pretty rusty, he'll be pretty short of match action, especially if Madrid get knocked out of the Champions League fairly early. He won't have played for 3 or 4 months, so it'll be very hard to justify keeping him in the team ahead of Valdez when he's playing so well. So that's the very first question. And then at right back, another very interesting one is Juanfran, who's done extremely well for Atletico Madrid. He got a game against Equatorial Guinea. And that's a proper position for Del Bosque. I think for the last few years, everyone's Equatorial Guinea. Said, well, Alvaro Arbeloa is clearly the weak link in that team. He's okay defensively, he's solid, but he doesn't offer the same kind of ability coming forward. And that place is up for grabs. Arbeloa is still a good player. He's got a chance, and he gives good balance because he allows Jordi Alba to go forward more on the other side. But Juanfran playing very well, and he's one of three or four players who are in with a shout for that right back slot. So there's two immediately: Valdez and one Fran who I think will be pushing very hard for a start.
And something that's also very fascinating, the U21 team in Israel this summer was dominant in every aspect of the game. They have a lot of players that could easily, in my opinion, and I think in others, could also be part of this World Cup team. You know, for example, Isco, you know, maybe not others because there's better players at their position, but you could argue Isco's been, you know, one of the best youth players or, you know, under 21, whatever you want to call him, in the world. Do you think that he will get a fair shot at being part of the senior team?
Yes, possibly, but the problem for him and really the strength for that under 21 team, they were strong all over the pitch, but their best three players were in midfield. Isco, as you say, Asier Iarendi, who's at Real Madrid now, and Thiago Alcantara, who's gone to Bayern Munich. But the problem for those three is that they're all in the centre of midfield, and that is Spain's biggest strength.
Right.
And really, three players who, if they're fit, will almost certainly play as starters at the World Cup are in that central midfield area. Sergio Busquets, Xabi Alonso, and Xabi, how can they be left out? They've been so important to Spain over the last few years. If they're fit and they come through to the end of the season, they're not too jaded by the La Liga and Champions League exertions, they'll play. So I don't think any of the under-21 guys will get in. Maybe Carvajal at right back. He's one going back to that right back position. And even up front, Alvaro Morata is a very good young player. And the striker position is another one that's very open for Spain, with five or six players going for it. Morata's not getting much game time at Real Madrid at the moment. But if he does, he could push through into the national squad as well, possibly.
Yeah, and Morata, I believe, was in the top three goal scorers in the U21 tournament, even though he came off the bench in most matches. I was very high on him. I thought he had a lot to offer at Madrid, but we obviously know who are the players ahead of him. Let's go on to La Liga now, and this is something that we spoke about last week, and we hope to get into it at more depth today. Would you say that for the first time in a while, you think that, you know, three teams, four teams, let's even stick with three teams, can win La Liga? Do you see Atletico Madrid staying in the hunt until the last week, or do you just think things that happen in January with you know, Barcelona, Real maybe making changes money wise, just so on and so on, that they'll kind of sink back? Diego Costa will start to play, you know, not at the same level he's been playing. He's, you know, do you see them keeping up this magnificent pace that they've been able to accomplish in the last few months of the season?
I'll give you a short answer. No, I don't think they can, and it's a great shame. I'd love them to. It'd be great if they could shake things up and really sustain their challenge, but they don't have the strength in depth, and in particular they don't have the goal scoring options. Costa has been in amazing form. If he keeps it up, they've got every chance, but I don't think he will. It's been the form of his life. He's had a golden run for 2 or 3 months where he scored in nearly every game he plays, but I don't think he'll sustain it. He could well end up with 25, 30 goals, but he's not going to go along with a goal a game or more as he has been. And after him, yes, David Villa, but he can't be relied on every week now because he's, I think, 33 and he's had injury problems. And then you're really looking thin on the ground in striking options for Atletico. They've got Leo Baptistão, they signed in the summer, who's a good young player, but he's not played much. And you can't see him being a match winner week in, week out. So I just think that Atletico will gradually drop points. They'll finish third easily. But as they did last season, if we go back a year, they were in a very similar position. They'd started equally strongly. Falcao was scoring all the goals. And they ended up, I think, 24 points behind Barcelona by the end of the season. So they might make it closer this time around, but I don't think they'll take it down to April and May. It'd be great if they did, because the last game of the season is actually Barcelona against Atletico Madrid. So what a final day that could be. But by then, I think they'll be 10, 12 points off the pace. And it'll be between the big two again, as it always is.
And that, you know, that's disappointing, though. I was hoping you would not say that, but I was expecting you to say that. Do you think...
I hope that I could not say it as well, but really looking at it, the strength and depth of those two squads, especially if Atletico continue to do well in the Champions League, they're already through to the next round. If they go through the knockout phase towards quarterfinals, semi-finals, and they're still in the cup as well, the Spanish Cup's kicking off soon, that will put more demands on the squads. I just can't see them staying in it. And we've seen it recently, a couple of away games. At home, I think they'll continue to win pretty much every game. But away, in the last couple of games, they've lost at Espanyol, drawn at Villarreal, and Diego Costa didn't score on either occasion. And when he doesn't, no one else is really doing it. So I just don't see them staying up there.
What about 21-year-old Koke, who had a very, very, very good U21 tournament as well, and he's been rumored to leave. United's a team that's been very interested in him. Pretty much a lot of teams are interested in him. Do you see him staying with Atletico for the next, past January, even past the summer? Or is this one of these players that's so talented and so young that, yes, Atletico Madrid are one of the top clubs in Spain, but he's thinking he wants to go to one of the top clubs in the world?
Yeah, he is a very, very good young player, and another one from that under-21 squad. And the big thing in his favour as well is that he's versatile. In Madrid, at the moment, Atletico, he currently plays as a winger, more or less, although he does come inside a lot. But I think in the longer term, he'll end up as a central midfielder. He even plays fullback. He played right back for Spain in a recent international. So he's very versatile. He's a very clever player. Excellent technique. He's not particularly quick, but he's quick in the brain. And his set-piece delivery is excellent. One of the best in the world, I think, already. I think he'll stay Atletico this season, and then we'll see. Next summer, he could well go. He signed a new contract recently, and his release clause went up to around 40 million, so they'll get a good fee for him. And I don't think he'll go in January, because he'll want to see what the season will have in hold. Atletico will still certainly be in the Champions League at that stage. He may be in the title race still. He's one to keep an eye on for the future, and I agree, he'd be perfect for Manchester United, exactly the kind of player they need. But I hope and I think he'll stay in Spain until at least the summer.
Okay, you brought up Villarreal a few minutes ago, and they've been, I think, arguably the most interesting story coming up from the second division this year. And in the past, I just remember them playing in Europe and being a competitive team in Europe, but they had some financial problems from what I understand. Now they're back, though, and they start off the season in amazing form, and they've kind of fallen off a little bit, but still in fourth place. I believe Giovanni De Santos is on their team. I could be making a mistake. Am I right?
No, you're right.
No, I'm right.
Extremely well, yeah.
Right, okay, good. So that's what I thought. I've been watching him a lot. I thought it was that team. This is a guy that had an interesting career. A lot of people are familiar with him, and he seems like he finally found a home. Do you agree with that? I mean, is he good enough of a player to lead a team to the Champions League?
Yeah, he is. He's got that ability. He always has had that ability, but it's been delivering it consistently that's been his problem. And he's always been an interesting player, as you say. Came through Barcelona's youth ranks. It looked for a while as though he might challenge us for a regular first team place there, but then fell away and went away to a variety of clubs. Last year he was at Mallorca, where he did okay but couldn't keep them up. And now at Villarreal, he's got 6 goals already. He's playing very well. But it's certainly not just about him, and they are a really good team. They have been in the first couple of months of the season. And in their last game against Atletico just before the break, it was a 1-1 draw, but they were all over Atletico for most of that game and deserved to win, really. And in midfield, there's a couple of players who are having wonderful seasons, who are putting themselves in the frame for a possible Spain call-up. They were a bit disappointed not to get them this time around, and that's Cani, the captain, who's a bit of a veteran now. 32, I think he is, and he's playing very well. And also Bruno in the central midfield, Bruno Soriano, another veteran, I think he's nearly 30, but he's been having a great season in the central midfield. And those two, Bruno, Cani, and then Dos Santos up front, they're a very exciting team. They're attacking, they're more direct than they were from when people remember them 5 or 6 years ago, but they're still very exciting to watch. They like to go forward and score goals, and they play very good football, and they're in prime position at the moment for fourth place, which obviously could get them back into the Champions League.
Yeah, and get them a lot of money, which is important for the Spanish league.
As long as they only spend that that they earn. That's the problem that all these teams face. They get a little bit of money, get a bit greedy, and then spend double it and end up in financial problems. But that's football the world over, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Malaga, a team that's been covered here in Israel because there's been reports that Yossi Benayoun was going to go there. Now those reports seem to be off. Really struggling this year after Pellegrini and Isco and so on have moved on to bigger destinations. We won't say better, bigger destinations, doing different things. They're struggling right now, 13 points in 13 matches. They seem to just not have the same, management, anything. Was Pellegrini the reason that this team, made it all the way, to the quarterfinals of Champions League and were, in the hunt last year all the way through in the league? Obviously not to win, but at the top of the table. Is this the result of Pellegrini and his staff and some of the key players leaving?
Partly Pellegrini, but it's mainly money. They had a supposedly very wealthy new owner, took over 3 or 4 years ago, Sheikh Al Thani.
Ooh.
Put in a lot of money initially, and they signed some very good players, such as Joaquin and Saviola and Baptista and a number of other players, and they hired Pellegrini, and they had a great couple of seasons. They qualified for the Champions League, and then they went last season, as you said, all the way to the quarterfinals. They were actually within a minute of knocking out Borussia Dortmund in the quarters. But during the course of last season, the money started to dry up. Al Thani stopped putting money in, and that's left them with enormous debts. So they had no choice but to lose everybody at the end of last season. I think they've only got 3 players from last season that are still with them. And the replacements they've got just haven't been the same standard. So it's inevitable that there's going to be some drop-off. I think for them, to be honest, avoiding relegation is as good as it's going to get this season. They should do that. They're not that bad a team. But the way that the club is being ripped apart at the moment, it's very sad to see how they looked like they were on an upward curve, and then they had the rug pulled out from under their feet, and they're really just struggling to stay afloat now. Bernd Schuster, the new manager, very experienced, of course, but he's got a horrible job there. They lost 5-0 at home recently to Celta Vigo, who were in the bottom 3 at the time, and it's going to be a tough, long winter for them. I think they should stay up, and if they do, that'll be a success.
All right. Let's move back now to finish off with the Spanish team. Before the interview, you and I were talking about the political aspects of this match in Equatorial Guinea. We know they have a lot of oil. We know they hosted the African Cup of Nations. People are wondering, especially I know in the Spanish government and the media, what exactly were the motives behind this match? I mean, the team is not that good. You see Germany, Italy, and all these countries in Europe playing good competition. England welcoming Chile to Wembley. I mean, good teams seem to have qualified to the World Cup. And meanwhile, Spain, the defending champion, is playing against Equatorial Guinea. What are your thoughts on why this match occurred?
It's a very strange one, and I think part of it is that they left it so late to arrange it. Spain had been due to play against Russia in Abu Dhabi or Dubai, and then for whatever reason that didn't happen. So they were left with less than a month to organise a different fixture instead, and they came out with this one. And why? I mean, it'd be nice if they told us, because so far Del Bosque and the players have refused to talk about the reasons why they're there. And for me, that's fair enough, because they didn't organise it. They go where the federation tells them.
Right.
The federation haven't even offered an explanation, even though they've had a lot of criticism for going to a country where the government has been criticised for alleged human rights abuses. Spain, the world champions, are going there. Why? And that they haven't told us. It might have been money, but there have been reports that they weren't actually paid to go there, so the plot thickens with that. It could just be a personal favour from Del Bosque, because the Equatorial Guinea coach is Andoni Goycochea, an old ex-Spain international, old friend of Del Bosque, so it might have just been that. It might have been that the climate in Equatorial Guinea is fairly similar to what they will encounter in Brazil next summer, so maybe he thought it would be a good opportunity from that perspective to get used to the weather and playing in those conditions. But the annoying thing is they haven't told us. If
right.
They could just justify why they went there, then we wouldn't have to have this conversation. We'd be saying, yes, Spain went there because, why they went there, then we wouldn't have to have this conversation. We'd be saying, yes, Spain went there because, but they won't do it, and that's pretty poor, I think. They should really give some kind of justification or explanation why they organized this fixture.
Yeah, absolutely. And the military, there was a coup in 1979, and you said alleged human rights.
Pretty poor, I think. They should really give some kind of justification or explanation why they organized this fixture.
Yeah, absolutely. And the military, there was a coup in 1979, and you said alleged human rights, abuse, and so on and so on. A lot of money, though. People are still also wondering about the African Cup of Nations, how exactly it went there, and a lot of people just point to money. But, you know, you brought up a lot of great explanations, the conditions, the manager is a former Spanish international, so that's something for people who are pessimistic like me to maybe take a look at. Let's finish off with this. Spain's playing South Africa tonight. You know, I don't know if that's much of an upgrade, to really be honest. They qualified for the World Cup just because it was, you know, being played in South Africa. They don't really have any particularly very strong players. But still, you know, a team that was in the World Cup, I guess, in the last World Cup they're playing. And what do you expect for us to see tonight? Are we going to see the same kind of lineup, or again, are we going to see some changes where, you know, I don't know. What are we going to see tonight? What do you expect?
I think we'll see the strongest possible team. So people like Iniesta will come back in. And obviously, Iniesta going back to the venue where he scored the World Cup winning goal in the dying seconds a few years ago. So it's an emotional occasion for Spain, a nostalgic occasion, and a feel-good, really, for them. Why the game was organised, it may have been because they were in the continent with Equatorial Guinea. Again, we don't know. But it's a positive for them, really, to go back, assuming that they put on a decent performance, which you think they will, as you said. South Africa not the strongest opposition at the moment. So I think we'll see the strongest possible team. But there'll be a lot of changes. I don't think many players will go through the 90 minutes. But a nice occasion, obviously, for Spain to go back to somewhere with such happy memories.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it. That's where they won that World Cup, and maybe that was the motive for this one, to go back to somewhere where they won and, you know, give these guys a break, because they're playing in a tough La Liga and in the Champions League. Andy West, thank you so much for your time. Everyone can follow Andy West at AndyWest01, and thank you very much for coming on. It was absolutely a pleasure.
Thank you. Pleasure for me, and anytime. Happy to talk to you.
Thanks, Andy. Have a good day.
All right, so that was Andy West from BBC and a EuroLeague commentator speaking to us about the latest out of Spain. Andy's one of the best in the business discussing Spanish football in La Liga, so you should follow him at AndyWest01. He talks about everything from the Spanish national team to the relegation battle in La Liga to second division Spanish football to everything, so check him out. But our next guest on the show right now, very great show today, four guests, but our second guest of the show out of the United States of America, Mr. Mark Connolly from ESPN. Mark, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for coming on.
No, thanks. Happy to be here.
All right, let's talk about the U.S., because that's what this interview is all about, and you know, a lot of talk about what Klinsmann's been able to do with this program the last few years, and believe it or not, they actually show a couple of the U.S. games here, especially when it's later at night, when it's like 2 a.m. our time, 7 p.m. your time.